Appreciate the reading that was done earlier from Amos chapter 5, because I believe it kind of gives a backdrop for what Paul has to say about the definition or his descriptor of love that says love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Because those same themes keep being repeated in Amos chapter 5. In fact, throughout the whole book of Amos, there in 7th century Israel, perhaps 8th century, but anyway, during that time, the corruption that was among the people of God was intense. And God spoke very plainly and boldly to the people of God. And he talks a lot about hating evil and loving good, and that's essentially what he says. Love does not rejoice in evil, but it does rejoice in good. But whenever I think about that, the first thing that comes to my mind, does it seem strange that God, through Paul, would write to a church and have to tell the church, don't rejoice when evil is happening? You know, if he was writing to pagans, you'd think, oh yeah, they need to hear this message. You know, we like to talk about how our world's going to hell in a handbasket, and you know, all the bad things that all those people out there are doing. But Paul didn't write to them. He wrote to church and says to a church, you do not delight in evil if you're loving each other. You rejoice when truth wins out. It just seems strange to me that would be the subject. But, you know, when you look at the whole letter, you see envy and pride and selfishness and uncontrolled anger and grudge holding, and you see this church that should be full of joy because of the Spirit is divided, brothers being sued by brother, a family being torn apart by divorce, the gathering of saints is being used as a time to shame the poor, Christians are denying that there's the hope of life after death. I mean, just on and on and on, and it seems like the only thing they're unified about is not being unified. And all this evil is going on among them. And Paul says, love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices with the truth. I looked at several translations this week as I wanted to see how they all compare. And the King James says, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. The English Standard says it does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. And it seems like truth is consistent in all of them. It does not rejoice, according to the New Living Translation, about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. And I look at all of those and which one resonates with me? Because if you look up the Greek word, and you can do that if you want to, the Greek word is translated all of those in different translations. They're appropriate. Iniquity, evil, wrongdoing, injustice. I chose injustice, and the reason I chose to kind of focus on that is because of Amos. Because he's talking about all the injustice that's going on among the people of God. And that injustice is evil. And they're denying the truth that should be resonating among them. And so, as I started looking at that word, I wondered, why was it that in 2018, and I just ran across this, What was the word of the year? 2018, anybody know? You can look it up. I mean, you can look up the word of the year for any year since there's been a collection of that. The word of the year 2018 was justice. Why? Why was it that people go to the internet and look up on Merriam-Webster or Wikipedia or wherever? Why is it that that was the word that was looked up the most? I believe it's because of injustice. We don't concern ourselves with things that there are not negative things going on in either our life or someone else's life. And so justice and injustice, I think, really point to evil that we are not to delight in, and truth which we are to delight in. We're not to delight in injustice, but we are to rejoice when justice or truth prevail. So what is justice? Well, it has varied meanings depending upon context. There's technical meanings and legal meanings and philosophical meanings. But there are also ways it uses verbs, it uses nouns. Within the executive branch of government in the United States, there's the Department of Justice. In the judicial branch, the Supreme Court members are called justices. Justice Souter, Justice whatever, different names that, of the, those people that are there. They're called the justices. Different words are used this in different contexts. For instance, I read an article about this Nazi who was a guard in, I believe, Ravensbrück, but it was one of the concentration camps during World War II. He had come to America, changed his name, and evaded, the article said, justice for 73 years when they caught him. How do you evade justice? You evade the truth coming out. You evade what should have happened. They talked about his long flight from justice. So, at the other extreme, if you will, Madonna, during one of the award shows, she was tasked with talking about Aretha Franklin after her passing. And she said, "The time that I have to talk about this, I cannot do justice to her life." So justice can have all kinds of meanings, but I believe whenever it's used as a translation for that word, that love does not delight in injustice. I believe there's a very special meaning. There are some questions, I think, this morning that need an answer. What do we mean when we say justice was served? You know, in my mind, I think, well, was the proper sentence handed down, or penalty handed down, if you will, for the crime? That would be the first thing that comes off my mind. But in a legal sense, it means, did justice have its way in the process of law? Was justice held up as the standard to which this proceeding is accountable? When you go to court, you go seeking justice, and justice is to prevail. It's not a matter of whether you win or the other person wins, whether the state wins or the defendant wins. It matters most if justice prevails. So did justice or injustice win? And someone said, well, it's simple. If they broke the law, they need to pay the penalty, because you break the law, you need to pay the crime. If you do the crime, you have to do the time. But you know, there's such a thing as an unjust law. We've had them on our books, and they have been changed. There was a time whenever it was the law of the land that you could own a person. And if justice was simply a matter of upholding law, then that law was right. In fact, in my mind, I did a kind of a just a mental imagery for a few minutes of some heroic lawbreakers and some despotic law enforcers. And you can see the list. Peter and John and the apostles were all put in jail for breaking the law by preaching about Jesus Christ. Was that just? It was against the law, but was it just? The signers of the Declaration of Independence, to a man, broke the law. And if we had lost, we would not have statues of them. The winners get to write the history. Harriet Tubman, who helped bring with her by herself and then collectively with some military people, hundreds of slaves north, every one of them breaking the law. Martin Luther King, civil rights movement, marched. He did his best to do it within the law, but there were times when they broke laws because they were unjust laws. So justice is not just about law keeping. Justice is something even more fundamental than that. Because laws are made and they're amended and changed by those who are in power to determine that. You think about the list that I had. Go back to the screen before that. Stalin, Mao, Adolf Hitler, Pol Pot, Idi Amin, Saddam Hussein, every one of them upheld the law in their country. But of course, they got to make that law. They got to determine what was right and wrong. And if there is no absolute moral right and wrong, then right and wrong is only determined by who's in charge, survival of the fittest, if you will. If that is the case, then we're living in a world where there is no God. Because God is a source of eternal what is right and wrong and just. If there is no God, then Adolf Hitler did not do anything wrong when he engineered the killing of 6 million Jews. Idi Amin did nothing wrong whenever he engineered the killing of millions. Pol Pot, his millions. Mao, countless millions. Stalin, untold millions. They were carrying out the law. Law is not the same as justice. Go back. Justice is non-negotiable. It is based in a truth that is unchangeable. And truth is another word for faithfulness and a defining characteristic of life as Jesus would have us live it. In John chapter 1, it says, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." Grace and truth, and the word truth there can also be translated faithfulness, full of grace and faithfulness. He showed us what living faithful to God was to look like. He also showed us what grace was going to look like in our lives. And then in verse 14 it says, "So the Word became human and made His home among us. And He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness." The New Living Translation, which actually translates that word truth in that way. And so, going back to the reading that Dave said so well from Amos chapter 5, you listen to that list, that litany of evil that is going on, the way they are looking to take advantage of those who are poor. And I did a list, or I pulled together a list on the theme of justice and injustice. And all of these things that I've got listed here, I don't even know if you can see them. Yeah, you can see them. They in Amos, he talks about oppressing the poor and the innocent, buying and selling the innocent and needy instead of helping them, denying justice to the oppressed and poor, illegally keeping items held in pledge, collecting unfair fines, wealthy women oppressing the poor and crushing the needy. They turn justice and righteousness into poison and bitterness. They cast righteousness down and trample it under their feet. They detest honest people. They force grain from the poor. They take bribes. They live very complacently with all of that. They act with pride. They cheat when they're selling. They use skimpy measures. They use dishonest scales. And then they gouge in the prices that they charge. That is a description of an unjust society. Christians who love one another do not delight in that. We rejoice in the truth. And folks, it's important as we read about love that we also understand how God views those who treat others that way. This is His response to Israel and how they were treating one another. Still in Amos chapter 5, verse 21. I despise your religious festivals. I cannot stand your assemblies. Imagine if we were doing these kinds of things and then coming together and singing, "Oh, wonderful Savior is Jesus my Lord." And it's just a wonderful time to be together, while Monday I'm going to go cheat the poor, the people that are most vulnerable. And God would look at him and say, "I despise it." Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I'll have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your song. I will not listen to the music of your harps, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Let justice roll on like a river. A passage that Martin Luther King quoted quite eloquently near the end of his "I Have a Dream" message. N.T. Wright is perhaps one of the foremost scholars of our day. He is maybe the C.S. Lewis or the F.F. Bruce, and maybe you don't even know those names, but those are names of world-renowned scholars. But N.T. Wright is way up there, and he's still alive. And I say this with no bragging, but a friend of mine met him in California and had his picture taken with him and sent it to me. He said, "I've met your twin." And he showed me the picture, and apparently we do look a lot alike. He's just a mini version of me. He's not as tall or whatever. But in the face, there's a lot of resemblance. But that's where it ends, because his intellect is so far beyond mine. We just kind of meet in passing from time to time, that kind of thing. But he did a translation in his in his commentary entitled Paul for Everyone. He said, love doesn't cheer at others' harm. Now that's an image, at first I think, who would do that? Well, let me think. There was the Colosseum, and there were Christians thrown to the lions, and people were in the crowd in that Colosseum watching these lions attack and kill and just tear up the flesh of these Christians because of their faith. And people are cheering for the lions. My alma mater is Freed Hardeman. And it always bothered me a little bit that our mascot was the lions. I thought, somehow or another, Christians ought not be called the lions. I mean, we ought to be against the lions. Love does not cheer when others harmed, but rejoice rather in the truth. How do we do that? How do we get to the opposite of rejoicing in others' harm? Well, let me take you back just for a moment to the point that I made whenever we looked at the story of the Good Samaritan. You remember I said the way we can determine who our neighbor is to get in the ditch. Be the guy in the ditch. When you're the guy in the ditch, anybody who will help you, you're happy for that person to be your neighbor. You don't have to be philosophically or intellectually or culturally or socially connected with that person. You don't have to have any of the same blood running through your veins. You don't have to live close to them. You don't care. If you're in the ditch, that person, you want them to be your neighbor. So whenever I look at this, how do we identify with those who are unjustly treated so that we don't rejoice when others are harmed? Inasmuch as possible, we have to put ourselves in their place. We have to be going to the library and being turned away at the door because of the color of our skin. We have to be among the 15,000 people in the county that Selma, Alabama sits, only 300 of which had managed to get registered to vote. 300 out of 15,000. That's why there was a march from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, Alabama, to draw attention to that. And that's why the state troopers with clubs and dogs and high-powered water hoses attacked those people. That's why people stood around and cheered what they were doing to the marchers. And then later that week, went to church and sang, "A wonderful Savior is Jesus, my Lord." Love does not delight in evil. It does not cheer when others are harmed. I believe that Benjamin Franklin said it well, justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. Until we're the guy in the ditch. till we're the gal in the ditch, until we're the one turned away, till we're the one that didn't allow to vote, until we're the one who can't buy a house except in redlined districts in St. Louis, Missouri, and in cities all across America. Unless we're the one who can't get a loan, even though we can pay for the loan, even though we have paid our bills and have shown ourselves to be a good credit risk, we can't get a loan because of the color of our skin. Until we can become the person in the ditch. Or perhaps a Muslim who has no desire to blow up anything, they just want to live their life and raise their kids. And you can fill in the blank for anyone else. We don't have to agree with every person, and we shouldn't agree with every person in terms of their belief in God or not belief in God or what God they believe in or how they live their life in order to love them and not delight in them being harmed. We are called to that by our Savior. And God has made it clear that He will not look on that as though it's not a big deal. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a Lutheran minister during World War II in Nazi Germany, and he was a man who helped with the resistance because he knew that what Hitler and the Nazis were doing was evil. And he wrote, and by the way, for his writing of these things, which he wrote from prison a few months before the end of the war, he was taken out and executed. He said, "We are not simply to bandage the wounds of victims beneath the wheels of injustice. We are to drive a spoke into the wheel itself." And that's why he served as a spy for the United States during World War II. He knew that even in his home country, there was injustice and it had to stop, and someone had to drive a spoke into that wheel, and he did, and it cost him his life. Martin Luther King said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And then he went on to say, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." And for him, that was so true because he said, "I can either die, essentially, my life can become of no value if I remain silent about the things that matter. At the same time, if I speak on the things that matter," and as he spoke in his last sermon before he was killed, he says, "I may not reach the promised land." And he did. For him, the promised land would have been equal rights for everyone. But he believed that day would come. And folks, if that day ever comes, it will come because Christians chose not to delight in evil, but to rejoice in truth. Desmond Tutu, who was a bishop, I believe, in South Africa during apartheid, and saw the evil that was done to the people of color, and there's three different groups in South Africa. There is whites, and there's blacks, and there's colored. Blacks are the indigenous tribes. Whites are the ones who colonize. The coloreds are some mixture of that, and they're claimed by no one. They're the lowest strata on the totem pole if you're thinking about who has the greatest rights. And whenever they were challenging apartheid, supposedly separate but equal, but there was nothing equal about it, he wrote, "If you are neutral on situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor." Love does not only not delight in evil, it rejoices in truth. You choose the side of truth. You choose the side of justice. You choose the side of rightness, of righteousness. And Jesus would agree with him, I believe, because in Mark chapter 9, one of the disciples came to him and said, "Teacher," said John, "we saw a man driving out demons in your name, and we told him to stop because he's not one of us." "Do not stop him," Jesus said. "No one who does a miracle in my name can in the next moment say anything bad about me. He's chosen my side. And it's going to look silly and certainly inconsistent for him to do anything evil or say anything bad about me." And then he makes this statement, and I've underlined it: "For whoever is not against us is for us." And you understand, in philosophy and in logic, that whenever you take a thesis statement or a statement of truth, if you turn it exactly 180 degrees around, that will also be true, the exact opposite of it. So whoever is not against us is for us. If that be true, and it came from the mouth of Jesus, so I think we can agree it's true, then it is also true that whoever is not for us is against us. Whoever is not for justice is against justice. Whoever is not for truth is against truth. Because love does not delight in evil, wrongdoing, iniquity, injustice. However you want to translate it, love does not delight in that. But it rejoices with the truth. Micah chapter 6 and verse 8. "What does the Lord require of you? But to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." That is the call that he made to Israel. And we, the spiritual Israel of this day, need to take that to heart. Cornel West wrote the following: "Never forget that justice is what love looks like in the public. If we want this community to know that we love them, then we need to seek justice for every person we come in contact with. By this will all men know you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." It's not enough just to love each other. We have to love everyone, and we have to love justice for everyone and not delight in evil. And so I leave you with this prayer. Holy God, forgive us when we have rejoiced in evil, wrongdoing, and injustice. As your servant James has said, change our laughter to mourning and our joy to gloom. Look down in mercy on the many who suffer indignities and injustice daily. Help us to recognize prejudice when we see it or do it, and cause us by your Spirit to see the beauty of everyone you created. May we rejoice in and hunger for righteousness and justice, and find loving ways to bring healing to our world. God, let justice roll like a river, and righteousness like a never-failing stream. We're going to sing our song of invitation. It's a psalm that calls us to a higher level of living. I really think these two descriptors are really the backdrop or the summary of everything that came before it. the envy and the pride and the anger and the grudge and all of that. All of those things were acts of injustice. They were all acts of evil, and we should not rejoice in those things, but with truth. If you need the encouragement of this church to live out this love, come while we stand and sing.